Well, when Paul and I got connected through some mutual connections, we have a lot in common. And we've never met personally, but we're going to at some point in time, and I'm looking forward to that time. But this is what this is kind of what we do. I've done this for a long time, so I need the tech savvy guy like Paul help me along, because I'm a little deficient in this area, but I'm on, and you got to give me a little credit. I'm on.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs podcast, the audio experience for basketball officials. Serve the game.
You just talk about determination and passion. I talk about work ethic. Take care of the things you can control, because if you put the work in, you've got some skills, and you become pretty good at this, somebody's going to take notice. But if you don't have the respect of your peers, it will limit you where you could potentially go.
Let's get rocking. I want to thank everybody for coming to Crown Refs Mentor's second monthly live session with special guest for October of 2021, JB Caldwell. Appreciate you being here, JB. I want to hop right in. I know you talked about your five pillars of officiating. I'm sure that could be a podcast and a session all by itself. And you can get to the rest of those, but I want to start with the topic of running the game, which is one of the five pillars that you have. Talk to me about what running the game means to you, and as an observer, what you see from other officials that tells you that they really know how to run the game.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. And first, before I get into that, thank you for having me. Thank you for welcoming me to Crown Refs, and it's my honor to be here with you. So you mentioned running the game, and that is one of the five pillars that I use as a roadmap as part of kind of our teaching methodology. And there's probably four or five points. It's a pretty complex topic, but I'm going to touch on four or five major points that I think fall into this bucket. I try to organize these things so an individual referee, as they're working on their craft, can focus on a particular bucket here or there. And this one is particularly, you mentioned run the game. So the first one is there's a leadership piece to it. And in order to be an effective crew chief and run the game, you've got to be willing to step up and lead the crew. Now, there's some various components of that, and I'll touch on one or two of them as we go through these five. But everyone doesn't want to be a crew chief. There are those that are not comfortable with that role. I like an analogy I liken is that you have to have a mindset that as a crew chief, you've got to be willing to put both your partners on your left shoulder and your right shoulder. And that can get really heavy sometimes. We all have games where we underachieve. So the first thing is leadership. The second thing is rules knowledge, procedures, and protocols. And I lump them all together. And that one in itself is very, very vast. But you've got to have a solid understanding and be able to execute the rules and how they're meant to be applied to the game. And then there's two other things that are lost. A lot of times people will focus on the rules, but they forget procedures and protocols. There's throw-in procedures. There's jump ball procedures. There's disqualification procedures. And there are certain referees that are really, really good procedurally, and their games run, and their games are executed at a high level. TV personnel love these people because their games happen within 2 hours. The game doesn't drag, but they're very knowledgeable on the procedures. And then the third thing is the protocols. So that all falls under the second point. Let me review that: rules knowledge, procedures, and protocols. You have to have a thorough knowledge of that. Leadership piece. And the third thing is, and as you master the different pillars, you have to have the respect of your peers, players, coaches, league personnel, could be ownership, could be conference administrators, various support personnel. There's so many different expertise when you walk into a particular venue at every level. And in order to be an effective game manager or crew chief, you have to have the respect of those different entities, and that has to be earned. The fourth thing is really massive, monumental, and that is, along with that respect, you have to have integrity. You can never compromise your integrity. It's really all you have at the end of the day as a referee. And the fifth thing is a mindset thing, and I'm sure we've heard it on here, but the mindset is you have to put the game first. What's best for the game? And then you put your crew and then yourself. And I know we've heard these things, but there has to be some authenticity in this thing. Now, what I haven't mentioned, those were just five things, is you have to have a feel for the game. You have to understand, I use a term called crew resource management, CRM. It's used a lot in aviation, aviators and people that fly these jumbo jets, et cetera. But your crew has various resources at your disposal. Sometimes you'll have a partner that's a really, really good rules person. Sometimes you have a partner that's not a good rules person, but they're a great play caller. So without digressing too much, being able to pull those resources together, manage those resources, and be willing to, here's the last thing I'll say, and then I'll see where you want to go. Getting a feel for the tone and the demeanor of the game. And then I use an example where, and I have my palm, I'm kind of illustrating it here. You have an open palm and you kind of have the game in the palm of your hand. A good crew chief, a good person that knows how to run the game, knows when to take the game and kind of grab a hold of it and bring it maybe back from rough to aggressive. Because all coaches like their players to play aggressive. But sometimes when the game gets rough, the game, they're always going to blame us if something goes south. So you got to know when to grab the game a little bit, pull it back to a good spot, and then let it go. Let them play. And there's times, and some nights it's like a walk in the park. It's good. But other nights can be tough.
A lot to digest there. Great points. You know, you talked about executing the rules, knowledge, the procedures and protocol part. Could you just go a little bit more into procedures? And also, I loved what you said about CRM and crew resource management. If you could just go hit on those two, if you wouldn't mind.
I think I'll try to give you a couple examples. Every league has certain procedural things or protocols that are sometimes league specific. We have our rules, and we have the major foundational things that we apply that go across from venue to venue. But procedural things like or tones of personality with your supervisors, the way they want certain things done. Arriving to the game on time. You say, well, what's that have to do with running the game? It sets the tone. I like to give one example. In a previous work life, I was an athletic administrator, and I've shared this story. The number one thing as an athletic administrator that I worried about was, are the referees here and are they on time? And then I would always watch if they were dressed properly and things of that nature, but it helps set the tone when they're punctual and they're on time. Arriving to the floor on time, checking in with, conducting a captain's meeting procedurally, effectively and efficiently, not joking around, but being businesslike, conducting the pregame with the table. There's so many different entities that go on. And if you can pull them all together procedurally, it's going to help you when you have to navigate through some troubled waters. And we're going to have to navigate through troubled waters. We know that. It's an adversarial business that we're in. So that's, I don't know if I did a good job with that one or not, but procedurally, that's kind of what I'm talking about. And in handling it in a business-like fashion. From a crew resource management, I kind of touched on that briefly, but it's kind of like we all get our schedules, and this is an exciting time of the year. You know, it's always an anxious time. Things are coming in. People are wanting to get their games, and everybody wants the big game, whatever that is. But then we look at our crews, and we see who we're working with, and we know how we respond to different people, and we're excited that we're going here, or we're going to get to work with Paul or whoever we're going to get to work for. But then we start thinking about, once we go beyond that, we start thinking about, maybe are there personality differences? Are there great chemistry relationships within a particular crew? Is there a great rules guy on the crew? Is there a great play caller? Is this particular person very aggressive on the floor, or very verbose, and someone else has a passive demeanor? And how are we going to interlink those things so that we maximize our crew's performance? I'll close with this. I am a strong believer that an effective crew chief, going back to that game crew self, puts their crew way before themselves and really tries to maximize their crew's performance. And then that will make the night better for everybody. But if they do that authentically, I think that's one of the pillars of being a good crew chief.
Appreciate that. We're going to open it up later on for everybody in the group to ask away, you know, at JB. And right now, if you have anything to add to our conversation, you could just put it right through the chat, and then, you know, I can ask him that. So JB, you talked about, you know, your five pillars. Another pillar is communication. Part of running the game, you know, communication is, you know, synchronous with running the game. But we do a lot in this group on effective communication, from having verbal judo sessions to rapid responses. I would love to hear kind of your communication style and what you teach your group.
Okay. I think the communication piece, first of all, it's ongoing. It never ends. It's, to me, of the five pillars, it's the most difficult. There's generational things involved. I'm an old school guy. I'm off the floor. There's things that are present today that were not present in my life when we started refereeing. I won't go digress into all those things, but technology, I'll just lump it into technology. So, and I'll share a story. So one of the things about my experiences were that, I was verbose. I was loud. I have a big stature. I'm 6'4". But when I first started refereeing, I was quiet. And we've all learned that, you know, you can't misquote silence, correct? You know, you can't, if you don't know what to say, you know, you can't misquote silence. So I think one of the things I would encourage is what I call role play. And I think if you have a friend or two or small groups, and you can get in, and it's uncomfortable sometimes, but if you can get in and have some role play and walk through some things, and someone can maybe be a coach. And I know you've done some of this, Paul. I've sat in on some of the things that you've done, and I think it's a great start. I think you have to get someone out of their comfort zone when it comes to communication, because I think of myself, when I first started, I would have a coach come at me and they would ask me a question and I didn't have the answer. Or I was not comfortable with the rule. And oftentimes I didn't say anything. And then that led to the coach thinking that I was ignoring them. So I wish I would have learned some one-liners, some acknowledgement type of things. And we do work on some of those things, being able to show some empathy and understanding when you're communicating with a coach, making yourself available, body language, nonverbal communication, those types of things. We work on that. So does that help, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we connect there because I love what you said about role playing. We do that with our rapid responses. And we figured we would just kind of highlight the 10 to 15 things that coaches say, because they only say about 10 to 15 things, but they say it 1,000 different ways. you know, and I know you were saying, you know, I kind of wish I had these one-liners. And so that's what I kind of wanted to do with this group is let's give them these stock responses. So when a coach goes in one direction, we already know where they're going because of our pattern recognition. And then we could already formulate a response kind of right away. That's why it's rapid responses. So what else can you tell us about, you know, from your career and your game management communication with coaches?
The thing I tried to do with coach was I really worked on my listening skills. We hear a phrase called active listening. And I think one of our faults is that, and I know for me, it's very true for me, is a lot of times when someone might be coming at me, I was formulating the response and I really wasn't trying to listen actively. And I think as I evolved and became a little better communicator on the floor, I really tried to listen and to determine what is the root of the concern. And then from there, I tried to provide an acknowledgement and a meaningful response. And it's got to be on point, and it you know, can't be cute, and sarcasm doesn't work. I would say stay away from it. Be businesslike. So if your listening skills, and you got to work at it, and it's difficult. So you have to get in that, you have to almost get uncomfortable with it. And then the other thing I did, Paul, is for me, is I think humility and empathy are, you don't have to win every conversation. I've seen, I had lawyers and police officers, and they make good referees, but lawyers like to get the last word, and law enforcement people like to win a lot of conversations. And as I was coaching and teaching different people that fell maybe under those kind of umbrellas, we would help coach them and nurture them in different ways. And if they were coachable, they became really good communicators. And it was simply by realizing, you know, you don't have to win every conversation, just acknowledging, maybe being, having some empathy. Let me get back to you on that. A couple of times I can remember in my career where I tried to work really hard on the floor. I was not the most gifted athletically. I was okay, but I worked hard. And there were times when you would be dealing with a particular coach or situation, and it just seemed like nothing was going really well. Nothing was working. And there were times that I would just tell the coach, say, you know, I'm giving you all I got, and I'm going to continue to work, you know, and I might say something I don't want to say. I'm going to work my tail off for you. And a lot of times, if you just kind of, and I'm going to say it, if you just kind of take your heart and put it out there, you know, sometimes somebody might, you know, it might get squished, you know, but sometimes somebody might nurture it a little bit and give you a little bit of a break. For me, it kind of worked. So again, there's no magical formula. I wouldn't even sit here on this call and say, I can give you this magical formula, but I will say this. You have to operate within your communication style, within the framework of your personality. If you try to take some cute one-liner, and I've seen this in my camps where I said something that worked for me in a cute one-liner, and I said it to a coach, and it worked because of maybe a relationship that I had with a particular coach or a history that I had. And so somebody heard that line, and so now they're going to go try to use that line, and they're going to use it again with a coach or someone that they have no relationship with, and it just blows up and it doesn't work. So I would say be yourself, and you know, you don't have to have all the answers, but if you can be open to it, I will. The word of encouragement I would say is that you will get better. You will improve, but you have to humble yourself and you have to work at it. And find a couple of people that are good communicators. The people, you got me going here, Paul, but people understand.
Keep it going.
People understand authenticity. People understand it. They connect with it and they relate to it and they appreciate it and they like it. So once they get to know you and they know you're not feeding them some baloney, they're going to buy your act a little bit better. And you have to earn it. It takes time. So, I hope that helps.
A lot of officials find themselves on the court or really evolve into that confident self, you know, once they get those reps and experience, and they get there because they finally become their true self, right? They're not taking words that they heard out of context from other refs and misapplying it in a situation. So you know, a lot of great things, and I agree with a lot of what you said. I do have a missed call, because out of your five pillars, I only have four written down. I have administrative, fitness, communication, running the game. So I missed one. What one did we miss?
Let me run through them. So, and I'll give you, this is a Reader's Digest version. And I put this together with some thought, and I pulled in some other information. But this is really geared to be a roadmap for any referee as you continue to work on your craft. Number one is building your foundation through solid fundamentals and mechanics. It's listed number one for a reason. Because without number one, two through five, really, it's not, you'll never reach your full potential. You have to work on your fundamentals, and that includes your rotation system. And let me see if I can pull it. I have the presentation here. I want to make sure I don't miss it. But hold on. Rotation system, coverage areas, positioning adjustments, good signals, advanced teamwork through eyes. And I won't go into the deep dive of that, but it's just working on fundamental things. The second one is communication, which you touched on. The third one, not listed in the order of importance, is just fitness. And I do have one thing to say about fitness. You know, we don't even use the term eye test anymore or anything like that. But here's the key about fitness. And you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be super, super fit, but you got to be in shape. You got to be the best version of yourself. Where it impacts you is that the first thing I talked about was the fundamentals. If you're not in shape or if you're not in good condition, it's going to impact your execution of the fundamentals. It's going to impact your ability to get in shape to make, you know, that initial dependable position and then make quality adjustments. And at the end of the game, fatigue makes cowards out of all of us. So if you could, at the end of the game, when it's the critical time, we're all tested, we're all tired. And then if we're not in shape, it's going to be magnified. So that's all I want to say about fitness. So we want to look professional. We want to have great appearance. But really the key is that, you know, it's going to impact your mobility, your ability to get up and down the floor and cover the floor. The fourth one was run the game. And the fifth one, I listed last, but it's the one that gets most referees in the most trouble. And that's administrative details or administrative duties. They don't take care of off-court things. They don't get in the rule book and study the rules. They think they can, by the way, rules knowledge is a breeder of tremendous confidence. When you start getting a grasp of the rules, your confidence level on the floor, and when the coach or someone that comes at you and you really understand the rules. And by the way, you don't have to be, you know, I'll mention a shout out for Al Batista, who's the best rules guy in the world that I know, but I'm not saying you have to be at that level, but you've got to have a firm grasp of the rules, and it will give you confidence. So those are the five.
Got a question from Elvis from Vermont. Elvis, why don't you unmute yourself?
Hi, how's it going? Thank you for having me, Elvis. Paul, and thank you, Gibby. Thanks, Gibby, appreciate it. My question pertains to communication, yes, sir, with the self. So we spoke about communication with coaches and players, but self-talk is something that has helped me a lot throughout the years, and I'm wondering if you have any tips on self-talk, what type of things do you self-talk on, or what type of situations do you like to use that?
Self-talk is huge. Eric Lewis, who's a finals guy, and he's a good friend of mine. He's in his 18th year in the NBA. We got him started back in 95. It's one of the pillars of what he teaches, self-talk. I would find up and down the floor, there's four or five things you should do every time. There's like little mental checklists. So that's one thing. And I'll be happy to go through that checklist. We can go through that. You all probably know it, but there's four or five things you should do every single time you go up and down the floor. And it's self-talk. The second thing is I'm talking to myself on the floor about my fundamentals. I always want to be in initial dependable position. And then if I've had a couple of difficult plays, tough calls, I want to make sure that, for example, I always said I want my first call to be a good call. If I run in self-talk, I might go 10 minutes in a game and I don't have a whistle. So now my self-talk is don't feel like I have to insert myself in the game because I haven't had a whistle. I want to make sure that I'm going to have a quality whistle. Mine revolved around fundamentals, positioning, and the tone or demeanor of the game. And if there were problem players or problem actors in the arena, how I'm going to be aware of that. So self-talk is tremendous. We need to get more referees to do it, but I'm going to throw two other terms at you, if I may. I'm not trying to pivot here, but these are two that during my time as a supervisor and throughout all of my teaching, two words, awareness and discipline. Awareness and discipline. I'll give you just a quick snip on each one of them. Awareness is, it ties into Paul's first thing about running the game. If you're going to run the game, you have to have a big picture mentality and you have to have an awareness of everything going on, not just your plays. You have to have the ability intellectually and the mental capacity to process every play and what's going on with your partners as well. And it can be emotionally exhausting. So it's a physical piece and an emotional piece if you're going to run the game. So awareness. And the second piece of that, and they're interlinked. Think about this now. Think about this. Is the discipline. And the best example I can give you is if you don't know your coverage areas, it's going to be hard for you to be disciplined because you don't know really what is your kind of geographical boundaries. And then the next piece of that ties into awareness and discipline as when do you extend? When do you insert yourself and go get a play in front of JB or Paul or Eric Lewis or whoever? And that's, so if your awareness is on point, your discipline is on point, you got some self-talk going on, and all these other things were producing at a pretty high level, now we got a pretty good package. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, sure.
Absolutely.
Love that we're talking about running the game. You know, one thing that stops officials from running the game, and obviously lack of rules, but and I just put out a post on overcoming the fear of coaches, is that lack of courage. So JB, let's talk about overcoming our fear in these critical moments of the game to just call the rules as written and not, you know, make it such a big deal, like it's the biggest decision of our life.
I think, I mean, the timing of you bringing this up, Paul, is super. We had a program this weekend, and I'm gonna link this in, and I really want to frame this in the context of I'd like to open it up to the group because I need some help, and I'm serious. My generation, and I'm off the floor, but I'm still relevant. I'm still connected, and I love teaching and training. So in my generation, we didn't have a lot of technology, and we had a lot of this. We had a lot of face-to-face. We didn't even have the stuff we're doing tonight, which I think is great. It's a great tool. But when you had issues on the floor, they were addressed. Maybe not with a technical foul. If someone got knocked down hard on a foul. Stay with me on this because I'm going to, everybody listen to this. This is huge. Someone goes to the hole. There's a hard foul. They go to the floor. The guy, you know, is going to maybe take a little exception. What I'm seeing a lot of these days is the referee gets the foul and then they leave the play. And then the slot who's coming in maybe to pick up the players, there's no communication between the partners like, hey, Paul, I got him. Paul, I got him. You know, Paul made the call. Paul makes eye contact with me before he releases, and he just looks in my eyes. I go, I got him. Now, he knows I got those two characters, and I'm watching them the whole time. Dead ball efficiency. That's another area where I see a lot of particularly younger referees, but it's not just younger referees. They drop their head in their eyes. If you take your eyes off of the floor, you are rendering yourself useless. You're an expert witness. This is a great term. I learned this from Daryl Gerritsen. It carried with me my entire career. You have to have an opinion of what's going on out there. You don't always have to be 100% right, but if you can have an opinion, and if you drop your eyes or you don't see what's going on, you won't see that player chicken wing. I saw this weekend, guy gets fouled, a good referee gets the foul, boom. He pauses a little bit. He goes to the table. Guy gets up immediately, goes and runs to the guy that fouled him, and he gets underneath him, right ever, and he's chirping at him. And I'm telling you, it's not kumbaya. It's not, hey, I love you, man. Hey, good foul. He's saying something. Now, fortunately, nothing happened. Here's the thing. First of all, nobody saw it, which that got my attention, and we addressed it. The second thing is there were times throughout the weekend that there were things that happened on the floor that needed to be addressed. I'm not saying it was a technical foul. I'm an option guy. I'm going to go, what's in the toolkit? I'm a huge believer that a good official, a good crew chief diffuses so many things, and they don't have a lot of technical fouls. I didn't have a lot of technical fouls, but when I had them, they were there. It was we had exhausted the toolkit. That was the medicine that was required to get it back. So the topic was courage. My advice, and this, here's the question: is it generational? Is it generational? Because I don't want to be too quick to judge, but I'm seeing a lot of younger referees. And I don't know if it's lack of courage. I don't know if it's they don't see it. I don't know if they don't know what to say. I've been through this with a lot of referees. And as I get to know a referee, I know who's got courage. I know who's got maybe a quiet demeanor. And by the way, none of those are deal breakers. You can have a passive demeanor, but boy, they have great awareness and they deal with stuff in a very, very effective way. And you know what I'm talking about. You can think of people you referee with, everybody on this call, and you go, oh, he's really loud. You can tell me just what I'm a verbose guy. I mean, I'm not a quiet guy, but I'm not overly loud either on the floor. I'm businesslike when I referee. So I don't know if that really addresses. I know I'm rambling a little bit here, Paul, but I think if I had to sum all this up, and I'd love for some input, is when you see something on the floor, problems are not going to fix themselves. I promise you that. When someone throws down a dunk on somebody or someone blocks a shot and they say that proverbial, get that out of here, it has to be addressed. Or you are really running a high risk that you're going to get retribution. And I'll tell you one other thing. I played the game and I wasn't very good. I had limited skills, but I played hard. And I was not afraid to mix it up a little bit. But if the referee wasn't going to fix something when a player was being rough with me, I'm going to get rough. That's how I played. So, but if they called fouls or they addressed it, or I knew they were aware, does that make sense? I'll stop and help me out here. I don't know, Paul, help me. That was a great question.
It's funny how you mentioned generational, and I don't want to go too deep down this path, but I think along the lines of having officiating in a historical perspective, and I question, like, all right, why is there so much verbal abuse? Why am I seeing officials be scared of a coach? And then I think back, like, decades past, and like the trickle down effects from all of this. I mean, it was just different back then, but I do see a trickle down effect coming into modern day officiating from that dynamic of coaches.
Yeah. Today, coach official relationship is better than it's ever been. It used to be the wild, wild west. And so I get that. But I think, and I want to be real positive with this. I think, and I have empathy for young referees, because there's not a young referee. And I was a young referee one time. Paul, you were too. And as we advance, you know, we start getting more comfortable in our environments, and our experience factors in, and people are more comfortable with us. But as a young referee, I think part of it is because people aren't comfortable with you, and you're not comfortable with them. And it's a very normal dynamic. But in order to get someone comfortable with you, and this is another one of my teaching points, and it goes into a presentation that I give about the layers of development, but I don't want to get into that. But as I go, when you're invited into the room, let me hit this point. When you're invited into the room, you're hired by, you pick the league. It doesn't matter, NBA, Division I, Division II, high school association, it doesn't matter. When you're invited into the room the first time, there's a euphoric feeling about that. There's everybody on this call has had that moment. You got hired by the SEC, and now you're going to go to your first meeting. There's people in that room that aren't comfortable with you. You've not worked any games, and if you sit back and wait for everybody to get comfortable with you, it's going to take a long time. My advice to you is put yourself out there. You don't have to compromise. You don't have to do it within the framework of your personality, but you have to make yourself available to people so that they can get comfortable with you. And if that's true, if you buy what I just said there, that's true for coaches too. So when you go see them the first time, they're a little uneasy with you. You know, I remember I went to a game and I'm working with Don Rutledge, and he had like 6 Final Fours, and Don had great people skills, and everybody in the building, the band gave him a standing ovation. I'm going like, gee, many Christmas, you know, I'm going to Kentucky with Don Rutledge, and the band's going, welcome Don Rutledge, you know, and the band. And I'm like, good gosh, they don't even know who I am. So you have to make yourself available. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And the fact that you just mentioned Don Rutledge, I know he was one of your mentors. Talked about partnering. We just put out a newsletter about 25 tips for great partnering. You know, I'm all about trying to be the best partner in the world. And I want everybody listening to try to want to be the best partner in the world. And that means to everybody. That means to people you love and people who don't necessarily like you. So what do you want to tell us about great partnering, what you've learned along your career about this topic?
Great question. You heard me earlier tonight. I'm going to ask you, if people know you care about them and you want to see them succeed, they will, they'll run through a wall for you. And that's number one. Number two, one of the things I always like to do, and we used to ride the games a lot. I know that's not as big a deal today. Can you hear me on the okay?
Yeah, loud and clear. You're good.
Okay, good. So knowing someone's travel plans, if I can help them or if I can go out of my way, you know, I would pick people up at the airport at a particular city if I was in, or if they were coming into my locale. If I could get together with the crew prior to the game or post game, things of that nature, Again, it goes back trying to make myself available and trying to build that chemistry, going back to crew resource management. And Paul, you brought up a great point. You're going to work with people over the course of your career that you don't have great chemistry with, or maybe you don't enjoy. And you know, that's when you got to maybe kick into, you know, you got to be a professional. It's a business-like approach. And you've got to be good enough to overcome that. And I had some great mentors along the way that taught me, and the way they resonated that particular point with me is, you've got to become good enough to protect your brand. I'm J.B. Caldwell, the CEO of J.B. Caldwell, whatever that means. And all you are of yours too, and everybody else on this call. And one of the things, a teaching point I have is, everybody has revenue that they generate. And some people make a lot of money, but everybody's generating, and you got expenses, and you got input, and you got output, but you got to protect your brand. And you do that by being professional, and you treat people with respect, regardless of position power. And then you try to bring unity and cohesiveness within your crew. And I think if you're able to do that, and you have to put in some effort with it, it's not going to just magically happen. You can't be a loner or isolate yourself, particularly when you're traveling as you go up in your advancement in your career, and you're starting to coordinate travel plans with people coming in from different cities, going to a particular venue. And then at the end of the day, I'll close with this. And I was a supervisor for a while, and you know, my crew chiefs were real important to me, because at the end of the day, you're entrusting the crew chief to make sure that the crew gets there on time. And then you're also putting a lot of trust in the crew chief to make sure that the game is properly adjudicated and administered and refereed. And it doesn't mean you have to be perfect, but it means, you know, if you have that trust with your supervisors, your game schedule is going to reflect it. So just be the best partner you can be. Take care of your partner, and game crew self.
I just want to follow that up. Something I've been thinking about a lot lately is like focusing on not speaking negatively about anyone in my life, even the negative people that you see all over the world, like not even sharing a negative opinion to my friend about them, because I view that as counterproductive to self-development. And you're going to hear it a lot this year, guys, when you're reffing, whether you're going to board meetings, whether you're meeting up with the crew after the game, other people are going to talk bad about other refs. So just don't be a part of that. Like, don't contribute to those conversations. Hopefully you guys can follow through with that. There's a few questions in the chat. Let's go with Zach first. Zach kind of had a follow-up to Elvis's self-talk question. Zach, why don't you unmute and ask away?
Hey, JB, I really appreciate all the time that you're taking to really go through this. This is super eye-opening as a, second-year official coming from the pandemic season here in Arizona, and just really learning a lot more about communication with coaches and game management and all that. So my question for you was, I'm a little unsure in regards to the 4 to 5 self-talk things that we should be processing up and down the court. Obviously I can think about, clock management, as well as, backcourt, frontcourt status. With NFHS, big thing is, if they're trapping, we want to keep an eye on the 10 second count, stuff like that. But I wanted you to delve a little bit further into that, because, as a new official, I'm just a little unsure about that.
You touched on a couple of things, but you did a little bit of a deeper dive. So, I spent some time with a professional group over in Taiwan. We actually covered these things. It's a checklist. Okay. And what it will do, and you went a little deeper there. So you got into the tone and the demeanor and style of play and front court, back court. That's all important. But every time, what'll happen sometimes in a game, you can go watch and you have to learn these things because clock management is going to take you years to master. So I'm giving you a break here. So people say, I got the clocks. It took me 2 years before I became a really, really good shot clock manager. And even then, you still, there's time. Fractions happen, but that's why you have partners, you have crew resources, but in some cases you have triggers that'll get you to the technology that can help you. But boy, when you have the answer, but here's the five things. So you mentioned clocks. You should have a habit. So you should familiarize yourself. We talked about protocols and procedures. When I go to a building, when I go to a new venue, I don't referee anymore. But when I did, I got out on the floor and people would see me walking the floor like an hour and 15 minutes before the game, want to know what I'm doing. I was familiarizing myself with the floor and where the clocks are and things of this nature. So I didn't have to do it in 5 minutes. And now all of a sudden I got two teams out there and I got all other distractions. And now I don't have a chance to do it. I do it before anybody gets in the building. And then there's always a few people look and go, wow, this guy's pretty professional. This guy's preparing. And so you can see where that would be a positive. And it wasn't fake. It was real. It was because I don't like being surprised. Paul can tell you. I mean, I don't like doing stuff and getting surprised. I want to try to be the best I can be. And I make a lot of mistakes. So clocks in Vanderbilt, by the way, Vanderbilt has like 21 clocks, you know, and there's benches on the end. And everybody's telling you, oh, when you go to Vanderbilt, it's going to screw you up. I actually did okay at Vanderbilt, but it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. It'll throw you out of tilt. It's like a pinball machine that you go tilt. You go, whoa, whoa. So clocks. Every time up and down the floor, clocks. Number two, your partners. Hey, look here. Big picture mentality. Why do we want to know where our partners are? Because if they miss a rotation, you can fix it. That's why if you know where you're, you know, and now you're the guy that's always fixed rotations. If I go to a game and I go, yeah, look at that. Remember I said awareness and discipline? Zach had the awareness and he checked the partners and he fixed it. Nobody even knows it. Nobody even knows it. His partners know it, but he just did it. And I go, that's a good partner. Number three, know where the players are. Always have 10 players in your field of vision. Have a big picture mentality. So don't get so focused on just, now there are times when you have a competitive matchup and that's where your focus are, but you have a field of vision that you should be looking out of the top of your eyes, peripherally, vertically, and horizontally, and seeing big picture things. So clocks, peers, players, where's the ball? Always know where the ball is. And then the last thing is I say, know the score and fouls. Now, there's not a referee on this call, or if we were in a room with any referees, if you say, do you have those things every time up and down the floor, they're going to tell you they get them every single time. But what I'm telling you is that if you know 42 has four fouls, you know team A is up by six with 2:26 to go in the fourth. You know where your peers are, your partners are, and you know the clocks. You're pretty well equipped to make a good informed decision. Now, that might seem a little overwhelming to you right now, but here's the good news. You start practicing that as normal. That's normal basic operation for Zach and other referees, and you're going to take your refereeing to another level. You're going to become the guy on the floor that has a lot of the answers or has an opinion when something comes up, and you're going to start making better informed decisions. Don't look for a lot of accolades when you do it. Just do it. As someone that's watched thousands of referees, I'll know it. I'll figure it out in less than 3 minutes. I'll figure it out. I'll have a pulse. I might not have all the answers, but we'll have a pretty good idea. Does that make sense, Zach? Did I answer that question?
I think you answered it beautifully. I appreciate that.
And, on top of that, to your point, you take those five things, we're not eliminating the tone or the demeanor of the two teams. Okay, because we're going up and down, we're refereeing the players, but and there will be things that happen that distract you from being able to pull all that data that I just told you, all that information. But if you're doing your work throughout the possession and you're covering your primary and you're getting your competitive matchups, and now here we go in transition, depending on where you're at in the floor, you're going to have different responsibilities, whether you're slot, trail going to lead, or lead going to trail. When you're lead going to trail, you got big picture mentality. You got everything in front of you. When you're slot to slot, you got, you know, you got license to go 50, right? You can go 50. You have in transition, you got a license to go if you need to, but you got a different field of vision. The hardest is going trail to lead when you're going and you got to look back and you got to catch the clock. I would always catch the clock on that basket, you know, and now I've got to bust it because I got to get down there so I can receive the play. Okay. Make sense?
Makes sense. Thank you so much.
Okay. You bet. I hope it's good stuff. It's good question. Great question.
Appreciate that, Zach. Zach just signed up this week, so we're happy to, expose you to this high level stuff so early on in your journey. I want to bounce back to Will. Will wanted to rehash a question about leadership. Go ahead, Will.
So JB, thank you just first of all for just explaining the run the game pillar. But one of the things that I just like think about, like, what leadership books do you use with your officials to help, like, with the run, the game, the pillar? Like, some things that I've invested over the years is looking at some stuff just of John Wooden's Pyramid of Success and Leadership book, along with Gordon and Smith's 7 C's, like you must win in the locker room first, along with just situational leadership and courage leadership. Those have been some things that have helped me a little bit, and transformational leadership.
I'm a big John Maxwell guy. God rest his soul, Colin Powell, military leaders, people that have had to lead men through, difficult things. But, John Maxwell is a guy that basically one of his messages is leadership is nothing more or less than influence. I think it's a little bit more than that, but I like John Maxwell. Anything you can get with him, that's what I would say. I learned a lot from people I've been around. One of the things I did, Will, when I was coming up, I was a baseball guy. I played in team sport, and my coaches were pretty instrumental in my life. But as I got into officiating, I would watch every referee. And I was competitive, but I pulled for people. I wanted to see people. I really tried to work hard to share in my friend's success. And we had 3 or 4 or 5 of us in Florida that were coming up at the time. And today there's so many good referees. I'm not even sure I could make it today with as good a referees there are today. But I think leadership is really, you got to be willing to step up. And leadership can be difficult. I talked to Jeff Nelson the other night. He's a Major League Baseball umpire. And he was talking about the grind of being a crew chief in Major League Baseball. And he says he's got to know every single umpire's travel arrangements. There's just a whole list of things that MLB expects him to do. And I know the NBA is that way as well. So I think you really have to put others on your back and be willing to lead them and stand up for them if need be. And even if something happens in the game that you were not responsible for, I'll share a story with you. And then you triggered this thought by your question is, over the course of your career, you'll have things that happen where there's a controversial play. It doesn't matter if it's high school, college, wherever. You're going to have plays that there's a critical call or something happens and maybe it was mishandled. Major moment, mishandled. And maybe it was one of your partners. Hopefully it's not misapplying a rule or kicking a rule, as they say. Maybe it's just an error in judgment, but if we fail to properly execute a protocol or procedure, we fail to correct a correctable error, we misapply a rule, something happens, and maybe it was my partner that was the main culprit. One of the things that I did was when I was a supervisor, I felt this way too, is I never punished just one referee. I never disciplined just one. I always did it as a crew. And I was in situations where, I wasn't necessarily the person that maybe made the error. But, I certainly had my moments when I did. But I think if someone has to take some discipline, I think part of being a good leader is you don't let them go down. I mean, you go with them and you step up. And there might be some people on the call that disagree with that. But to me, you will gain a measure of respect amongst your peers. It's not an easy thing to do. For example, if something happens and they're going to suspend, somebody's going to get suspended for a game. Will, you're going to get suspended for a game myself and someone else is on the game. I'm probably going to call the supervisor and I go, if you're, I'm not going to make a big deal about it. I'm just going to say, look, if you're going to give Will some medicine and he's going to get one game, then I want one game too. Take one from me because I'm not letting him go by himself. I was on the game too. I could have fixed it. Even though maybe he made the mistake. Does that make sense to me? That's leadership.
And something that I've just been just trying to work with some even younger officials that are with me around me because I'm actually at 23 years old. With my assigner, I work with a lot of officials that are like 18 to 21, and it's helped me just by having them like understand what self-determination really means to them and us, because self-determination is what rides us. And this is what I've actually been working with college student officials and intramural supervisors who are newer to officiating at the University of Kentucky, which has been very special, just understanding that self-determination applies and you have to think about it every day to grow, have that elite mindset.
I think it's good stuff. And I'm reminded of something that Paul mentioned earlier, and that is the refereeing fraternity, as neat as it is, sometimes we're quick to talk about someone else's failure or mistake. And we don't always know what motivates that, but sometimes it's, we'll put somebody else down and it's to try to elevate ourselves. And you just talked about determination and passion. I talk about work ethic. Take care of the things you can control, because if you put the work in, you've got some skills and you become pretty good at this, somebody's going to take note in you. But if you don't have the respect of your peers, it will limit you in terms of your full potential, where you could potentially go. I'll leave it at that.
Good leadership quote, to kind of piggyback off what you were saying when you had to discipline the crew. And it's just, when the crew does well, credit the, I'm sorry, when you do well, credit the crew. When the crew fails, you take responsibility.
Yeah, I totally agree, Paul. And it goes back to that leadership piece is, you know, we talk about game crew self. And if whatever your roadmap is, if you really get this, it'll help drive your decisions, and your peers will know it. And you all know what I'm talking about, Paul. I'm sure you can think about when you get assignments and you look at the certain chemistry or dynamic of a crew, and you go, oh man, I love working with this guy or this person or this lady or whatever. And there's others you go, okay, I'm gonna check the brand tonight. He's a pretty good referee, but we don't have the, and so, but you have to be above, you have to be above that. And there are people in the business that are going to know it. And your peers will know it too. I think that's great stuff, Paul. And great questions from the group too. Good stuff.
You're on mute, Paul. You're on mute.
Thank you. Another incorrect call. But I got a great team backing me up. Good crew right there. You see that, JB?
We're all in. Together. Listen, man. Hey, that's right. We're all going to have bumps.
What I was saying when I was muted, I want to take it down to Rashad Murphy. Rashad, thanks for coming. He had something to add when we were speaking about courage and conflict resolution. Take it away, Rashad.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Hey, Rashad.
How you doing, JB?
I'm great. Thank you.
Very good to see you again. You were commenting about the younger generation of officials, and me working, not that I've been in the business too long, but also I've realized that with younger officials, they lack conflict resolution and balancing it out with professionalism, as in personal boundaries. In my opinion, it's just a simple line of respect. Some things we are just not going to tolerate, per the rules, or hey, that's my limit, coach, that's enough. So I was raised by an old school dad, knocks in the head and all of that stuff, but we definitely had a line of respect personally and professionally. How can you apply those skills as a crew chief, as a leader, into a younger generation that may be lacking that?
I think that's a great question. I think what we all have to do, and I think of myself because I have areas that I'm not very good at. Technology's one, but I'll tell you what I did as a young referee. I just told this story to the group this weekend. I had a goal when I was coming up. I wanted to work 10 scrimmages in October. They didn't play games in October back then. Now they got NAI games October 26. I'm going, God, I mean, there's games coming up. I'm going to a game next week on the 27th out at St. Catherine in California, and I'm excited to go. But I would try to get 10. That was my standard. Now, I used to take a lot. My peers would, well, why are you doing this, JB? Why are you making us look bad? I go, no, I'm not trying to make anybody look bad. I go, I just want to go out and I want to see plays and I enjoyed it and I want to be ready. So when I have my first game, I'm ready. Now here's where I'm going with this, Rashad. That's the piece that happened. And I met that goal. And I would see referees, it took them 2 weeks to, you know, I'm going to ease into the season. Okay, that's fine. But when I moved up, and I started getting good crossover games in November. You have Kansas State playing Ole Miss in November 15th. You ain't got time to ease into that game. They're going to go at each other. So, but when I would go to scrimmages, it provided a platform for a couple of things. Number one, the coaches took note who were there. They took note who was working the scrimmages. And they appreciated that you were working on your craft. Now, I did not go into a gym. I was not a politicker. I just did not. And it probably hurt me in my career. There were great politicians in this business. I am not talking bad about them. their people skills, they were just really good at it, and they were comfortable. But what I was not. But what I did do is I always went up and greeted the coach, and I might ask him a basketball question about style of play, or, you know, coach, do you mind? I mean, I know we're going to do this scrimmage today, but if I'm in the area, would you ever mind if I just came and watched 30 minutes of your practice? And I want to hear the tone and the demeanor. And there's those two words again. I want to see how you coach your players and what are you teaching? And I learned a lot. Every coach that I ever did that to, I didn't do it to impress them. They were like, you would really do that? I go, I'm not. And I would, you know, this is me. I'd say, well, I didn't ask that question to try to impress you. I said, I didn't want to bop in on your practice and upset you, because they have closed practices, right? So you got to understand the dynamics. Every one of them said, oh yeah, just let us know when you want to come, JB. We'd love to have you. Would you talk to our kids? Would you talk? I go, sure, if you think I've got a message that I can talk to your kids. So when I was in the SEC, I was the Florida scrimmage contact. Billy Donovan is the guy at Illinois now, he was at Daytona State. He would invite me over every year. We'd go talk to his team. We'd talk about official player demeanor. We'd talk about official coach stuff. Do you see where I'm going with that and how you build relationships? And now all of a sudden, so that's that respect thing that we're talking about there. So, Rashad, to your point, if I was a young referee, I would try to incorporate some of that stuff into my routine within the framework of whatever you're comfortable and whatever the protocols are within your league, because your supervisors may have some set protocols and you don't want to violate those protocols. And now you're dealing with another set of circumstances, but I think that's something you could do. And you could, in other words, watch people from different generations, how they handle things. I wasn't in the military, but everybody thinks I was in the military, because when I talk to someone, I say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, thank you. And it's just standard operating procedure. Does that make sense, Rashad?
It does. Building relationships early can protect you later.
Yeah. And I think, Monty McCutcheon always says words matter. Mm-hmm. And I make mistakes. I'm an authentic guy, if you ain't figured that out. But sometimes the wrong things come out of my transmitter. And we have to go back and we have to try to fix it. But when you're authentic and you have a heart, people are more tolerant. They're more tolerant of you. That's what I have found. But I think how you treat people, the golden rule, I was adopted, brought up by my grandparents. And I was taught this at a very early age. So it's one of my core values. It's, just treat people with dignity and respect, regardless of title, position, power, race, ethnicity, how much money they got, the type of car. I don't care. Served me well as a scout too, because I was performance driven. And so anyway, I hope that makes sense, but I think our actions. And the other thing is how you treat people when no one else is watching, or how you treat somebody who can't help you. I see this all the time. Certain people will treat certain people a certain way because they think that person can help them get wherever they're trying to go. And I mean, I watch it and it doesn't sit very well with me, and I'm pretty observant. I'm not real smart, but I'm pretty observant. And that doesn't sit well with me. I like people that respect all people, and we all fall short. I fall short. So I think it's a great question, Rashad. I don't know if I gave a nugget or two, but if I was a young referee, I'd try to find me a couple of good coaches that I go, man, I respect this coach, and he or she can really coach. And I want to know how they go about teaching their craft, because that will help you as a referee learn the craft. And then you'll see the dynamic. Does that make sense?
It does. A lot of sense. Thank you.
It helped me. It helped me.
What else can you touch on about respect? I love this topic. I love that that's one of the major things that you've learned from officiating. You mentioned being integral. I think it's so important. I love what you said about treating everybody the same, right? You got to treat the janitor the same way you're going to treat the principal and everybody in between. And guys, there's a real strength to that. Not everybody can do that. That's hard for a lot of people because they are pandering to, you know, a person's particular like worth or value, or they're judging them on their career status. Like, there's a real strength in treating everybody with respect, and I'm gonna continue to do that, and I'm gonna continue to raise awareness this for you guys. Anybody have any questions now that we're kind of, you know, we've done a good chunk now. I have a few more topics I want to run through, but if anybody else in the group wants to speak, fire away.
Let me, Paul, one of the things, and Paul, you and I will work on this before you jump into the next one. I want people here to this call. One of the things that I'm going to try to do in the home stretch of my career, and we did it years ago when no one else was doing it, some other delved into it, but we do some crew chief leadership training courses. They're all classroom based. One thing, I'll just give you one thing that we do, and we had a lot of success with it with good, talented referees, but there was case studies. We would put them in groups, we'd give them a case study, and the dynamics of that whole thing forced them to pick a spokesperson. They had to figure out how they were going to present it. Some spokespersons got other people involved, got their crew. There was a lot of dynamics besides just going through the case study and presenting the play. And then every other group dissected their presentation. So, but we created a culture of where, look, this is not about who's the best group or, you know, but do you see where I'm going with that? And that's just one nugget that we do. And it gets them out of their comfort zone. But I see a lot of growth and development when they do that. And we give them a complex conflict resolution type of play. So there could be some things that come up with our platform. Paul, we can stay in connection on that. And if someone on the call is interested in that, I'm not trying to overly promote tonight, but those are some things that are near and dear to me that we'll be probably trying to make available in addition to the typical camp, you know, or program where you go and you learn the stuff on the 94 by 50. This is classroom based. And I won't go no further than that.